and welcome to episode 524 of the God is a Geek podcast. As I, Adam Cook, am the host here and see the flies gathering around. I'm just going to introduce everyone because the intro I had planned has gone so desperately wrong. How are you, Chris Hyde?
I'm gathering things.
It was going to be like the flies are around because it's so hot under the lights. It is hot.
It is. I'm not going to pretend it's not. It is warm.
It is, mate. But it's getting a little bit hotter, especially under the collar, because one Mick Fraser's here. Hello, Mick.
Hiya. How are you?
Well, a little bit spicier now, mate. Seeing that. How are you?
The heavens have just opened here. It's like we've literally just had a hell of a deluge. Yeah.
Why does everyone get rain but me? I know I live in the beach, but...
It was like a massive crack of thunder. It just pissed it down, so...
Well, I thought you were going to say pissing around, and I was going to say, well, we're not going to do any of that this week, because we are going to get into it this week, because there's some big old games to talk about. There's some smaller games we're going to talk about, and we've got listener correspondence as usual. But Mick, since we don't have you here every week, we should start with you, because you've been playing a game that I haven't played yet, I've heard a bit about, I've seen your video review of, I've read your review, obviously, and I'm rather excited to hear about some Aliens Dark Descent.
Yeah, great. It's good.
Cool, let's move on to the next game.
That never gets old.
It's really good. What do you want to know? Ask me anything.
I want to know, this is going to sound silly. Like, judging from the video review, which is, and some of the stuff I've seen of it, leading up, I'm getting XCOM vibes. And whenever I see a game that's XCOM, that's kind of like, tick. And then when I see it's like got a license that I really like Aliens, tick. But is that what it is?
A little bit, yeah. Ooh. It kind of is. It's got elements. So it's very much like XCOM outside of the missions. It's more XCOM outside the missions than it is in the missions, right? So outside the missions, there's like a hub where, because brief backstory, so it's like, if you've seen Aliens and you're familiar with Aliens, you know that the Marines arrive on a big spaceship, the Sulaco, which is quite like a famous thing now. It's like that. There's one of those. And for whatever reason, without spoiling, it crashes on a planet. And you play like a Weyland-Yutani administrator who teams up with the surviving Marines on this massive ship to find out what's gone on, why it crashed, how you ended up there, why there's aliens loose, because they're all over the place. It's really good. And the hub is the ship. So in between missions, you'll jump back to the ship where you then, and it's just like XCOM. So you've got like a med bay and you've got a research lab where you research weapons. When you kill aliens out in the field, you can collect samples and bring them back, and the doctor there will make.
That's really XCOM. It's like very, really very XCOM. That's good, by the way.
And it works really well in context, because it's not like there's. So you've played like Colonial Marines, you've played Fireteam Elite, these other Aliens games that we see.
And it's really interesting to me that you went to Colonial Marines at all, let alone first.
No, but like that, well, it was because of very negative reasons. It is quite a famous game, like a lot of people remember it because it was arse. But like how those games sort of took everything that was iconic from Aliens. So they took the creatures, they took sound effects, they took the voice lines, they took all that stuff, and then kind of forced them into an FPS. And Fireteam Elite does the same, forces it into a squad shooter, so it just becomes a shooting gallery. Whereas Dark Descent doesn't do that. Like, everything is really thought out. Everything seems like they've really put an effort into making it work. It's got context. Everything has context. So, like, even though the ship has crashed, there's a reason why you're researching. There's a reason why there's a death clock. It's not just like in an arbitrary 3 months time, the aliens will invade and the world will end, like in XCOM, which I'm not dismissing XCOM as like, because I'm a big fan of XCOM. A lot of people are. But they contextualize everything. So, like I said, you've got a death clock because the infestation level is rising all the time on this colony. So if it hits a certain point, you're not going to be able to withstand the aliens that there are. There's a reason that you're researching new weapons, because you basically lost most of what you had in the crash. And there's a reason that you're training Marines, because the top layer of the military on board the Otago are dead. So you're left with no officers, two grizzled sergeants, and a load of rookies. So like you've got to build them up. So they did put a lot of thought into it. But the missions themselves are only XCOM in terms of how it kind of looks. It's XCOM, but it's mobile. There's no turn-based shenanigans involved. Like, you just control the Marines. The Marines move. You start off with four. You move on, and eventually you'll unlock it, so you've got five. The Marines move in unison. They work as a team all the time. You can't pick one Marine to send somewhere and split them up. If you tell them to go somewhere, they all go there. But it's very, very clever how, if you click on an ammo box or a medical case or something to loot, one Marine, whoever's closest, will go and loot it. So if there's four boxes in an area, you can loot them all together. You click them all, and all Marines will spread out and go and loot.
Okay.
Likewise, when they're walking around, the atmosphere is fantastic. But when they're walking around, the use of lighting is amazing. And I didn't talk about it enough in the review, I think, but you know, if you've watched Aliens, if you're familiar with the films, the way they use smoke and smog and the lighting effects and the sound effects, they do that in Dark Descent, and it's perfect. They nail the atmosphere better than I've ever seen any other game nail the Aliens atmosphere. It's absolutely 100% bang on the money. But your Marines will move around.
That's quite a thing you said
there. Yeah, but it's absolutely true. Like, for the main negatives in the game were like the technical difficulties. There are some technical issues that you can't ignore. Some of I saw some other reviews that really marked it down for that, and I can understand why, because some of them are really bad.
Yeah, but the thing with technical things is, I can't speak for everyone, I find it can be per game, type of game, because those things are what will hinder my overall enjoyment of it. We've talked the frame rate debate, for example, has gone on for years, and people will, you know, with the Starfield announcement, where people are like, oh well, I don't mind it so much because it's not this or it's that, and, you know, whereas people are like, oh, if I'm playing an action game, I want it. It's, do you know what I mean? So it's like the technical stuff. It's really quite a personal thing, isn't it? Like one man's 30 could, there are people, we've had people review games for us. Yeah, that's where I was going. Yeah, that's kind of where I was going. Yeah, yeah.
But like, I mean,
it's really hard as well, right? Because the one thing I remember reading about it before it came out was, I think from previews maybe even, was that like, this is a seriously difficult experience.
Yeah, it's hard. It's very, very, very hard. And it's like, but again, this is important because, like, I've never ever played an isometric tactics game or a turn-based tactical game ever where I've been scared. Like, to be able to translate a horror experience into that particular genre is really hard because you're detached from it. It's not like FPS. You put somebody in an FPS or even a third-person adventure or a VR situation with horror, very easy to immerse and very easy to drop them in it. The only way Dark Descent can do that is to absolutely to nail that sense of just creeping dread. And not only that, but escalation. Like, this game escalates from everything's fine to fuck, they're coming out the goddamn walls in seconds. And it's like, every time it happens, every single time it happens, it's thrilling. It's absolutely edge of your seat, nail biting, thrilling. And that, for me, that's what got me past the technical stuff. Like, I saw the technical stuff. I mentioned a lot of it in the review. There are glitches. There is some texture popping. There was a little bit of frame rate, a few frame rate problems, particularly in some of the cutscenes. The lip syncing wasn't great. Some of the character models, not great.
It really sounds like you're describing a Firaxis game.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Because that's a lot of the things that... Because a lot of them, even like Marvel's Midnight Suns and all the XCOM... What was the one that wasn't the numbered XCOM games? Chimera Squad?
Yeah, Chimera Squad,
like,
yeah.
A lot of them have like frame rate problems with cutscenes, but the actual core gameplay...
That's what carries this. And I think that people... Like, I absolutely understand... other reviewers or critics or whatever, you know, are knocking a point or two off for the technical issues because they might have had a worse experience than me. I don't know what it's like on console. I was on PC, so I could adjust some of the settings here and there to make it a little bit smoother. But for me, nothing was enough to take me out of the moment. Like, I did have a crash near the beginning. Obviously, that takes you out of the moment. But beyond that, nothing was enough to make me, like, sort of forget where I was. And I think it's because, like, they do these wonderful little things, these little touches. So, like, it's an Aliens game. You can't have an Aliens game without lifting lines. Like, there's a lore or something. You have to use every line possible from the movie. It's such a quotable movie. I mean, it's next to, like, Star Wars and things like that. Aliens is one of the most quotable films
ever. But do you not worry that, like, because I know where you're coming from, but, like, I worry we're getting a bit old now because I don't know that they're all quite as culturally relevant or unknown.
Well, this is,
like, you know, someone,
this is one
I
of
feel
those
like
things,
you just suddenly like, went, game over, man, it's game over. Yeah. Like, your kids would look at you and go, that's gone insane.
I mean, it's got every line you can think of. It's got the, you know, shotguns are handy for close encounters. It's got,
get away,
you know,
from her, you bitch.
Get away. I don't think so.
I was going to say, surely they didn't shoehorn that
really?
In.
No, because I don't know where
I think
you'd
remember. I think if it was in there, you'd remember it.
But
right?
Like, well, yeah, but there's, well, yeah. So, but there's like, so anyway, they like I said, they kind of use every iconic point they can, like they like how Alien Isolation did to an extent. But like when I said in the review that this game is to Aliens what Isolation is to Alien, that is the best way I can describe
that's
it.
That's the line for me, man. That's the line where I went from like to that was the that was
because
the,
this
you know.
Is not this is not an Alien game. This is not about, you know, creeping you. So you enter the mission, you'll be given, particularly the first, they kind of front load a little bit. It happens again later on, but after the first mission, the next few are quite linear. But the first mission in particular has about 14 objectives. Now, it took me, I think, the first time I did the first mission, it took me about 4 hours to get through the first mission. And that's because you can attack these objectives in more or less whatever order you want. So it will be, we're looking for missing colonists. This guy was seen here. This guy was seen there. As you go and find those missing colonists, you'll find a bit more information. And it's like, right, well, now we want to investigate what's happening in this area because we've got a big surge of whatever. So you'll go and investigate that area. Then when you investigated that area, it's like, right, we need to find this particular executive who's got the key card. She was last seen on the second floor in this area. So like it organically kind of unfolds regardless of which order you do it in. But the important thing is that you have to manage your stress. The stress of your squad is absolutely paramount. And this is like Darkest Dungeon level shit where these Marines just crack. Like, as you can imagine in that situation, like you've seen the film where Hudson has a complete breakdown and it's game over, man, that famous, it's like that. But you'll start off quite, you know, they're all tough hombres. They're all like, oh, we can handle anything. And they go in and they're all full of machismo at the beginning of the mission. And you'll start, you know, creeping through. And it does a very clever thing where if you move I think it was a left mouse button made it, but I think it's like the right stick when you're using a controller. And that puts a flashlight, and the flashlight will highlight things of interest. Whichever Marine, I don't know how the game knows which Marine you want to do it, but it just happens. Like, whenever you want to look somewhere, whichever Marine is closest to that point, they'll just move their flashlight. And it's only a tiny thing, but it's such a cool touch because it feels like every Marine is a vital part. Every Marine is a character. Every Marine's doing their thing. But you'll go in and it will start off very simple. You'll be creeping through. You'll get to an objective. Then you'll get a blip on the motion tracker and there's something near you. And then it's like, fuck. Because if that one alien sees you, it makes a shitload of noise. You have to shoot. You have to fire. All of a sudden, another blip will appear because another one's woke up and another blip will appear. And then you've got a counter in the top, a mission counter that is always moving towards. Until you're spotted, nothing happens. You can creep around the level all you want. Nothing happens unless there's a story beat. Once you're spotted by one alien, that starts this counter off. And then it will say that the Hive has initiated a hunt. And then they'll be looking for you, actively looking for you. You'll get blips in the wall. And that means there's one hiding in a vent. And you've got to either creep past it or wait till it buggers off. You've got these rooms that you can run in and weld the door shut so you can rest and restore your sanity or like stock up on ammo or whatever. And it's got it'll go from one blip on the tracker to shit, I've made a mistake and the whole Hive is coming for you. And then you've got maybe a couple of seconds to get some sentry guns down, maybe weld the door behind you to give you a little bit of time to get stuck in. Get your Marines back against the wall, make sure everybody's reloaded. You can pop like calming tablets from your med kit to try and reduce their stress levels. Really clever stuff. And if you don't reduce their stress levels, you're basically fucked, because the Marines under pressure will not, like the aliens will grab them. They'll just run in and grab a Marine by its ankle and start dragging him off. If they're under extreme stress at that point, they'll misfire, they'll die, they'll get dragged away. You've got to catch them. Marines can lose limbs. You can lose a limb in the field, and that Marine has to be fitted with a prosthetic limb when you get them back to the ship, or they can't go back into battle. They'll develop pyrophobia, or they'll develop paranoia, or they'll become scared of the dark because they've been attacked out of a vent one too many times. And these things have to be treated back at the ship. You literally have to put the Marines in therapy, like you had to in Midnight Suns, where you had to put them into like the recovery pool. You've got to do that. You've got to get these guys in therapy because they're going to lose their minds. And if you take them out one too many times, they'll develop more traumas on top of past traumas. And then they'll go into the field automatically shitting themselves. Like as soon as they get there, they're already a wreck. So you've got to really manage all this stuff.
Sorry, they're already what?
Already shitting themselves. They're already afraid.
I thought you said something else. I thought you said they were already erect.
No.
Not already erect. Yeah, no, I realise now that you said already a wreck, which in context just shows says a lot more about me than, yeah.
But no, it's just a very good Aliens game, basically. And like I said, I can see where people are coming from with the technical side of it. But for me, I mean, maybe I'm a little bit biased because I'm a huge, huge fan of Aliens, like that film in particular.
Right, but if you're not,
one of my favourites.
There are different games in the genre. This is surely for Aliens fans. Not going to get the references. You're not going to understand the point of why the lighting is the way it is. Like, I don't know.
Well, that's an interesting point. But on the other hand, I think that this has enough in it to cater to, like, it explains it. So the one thing it doesn't really do is you don't have much context for the xenomorph. Like, when you see the xenomorph in this at the beginning, if you're a fan of the show or you've seen the films, or if you're a fan of the films or you've seen films, you know instantly, fuck. Like, you know this is a problem.
I think you know that anyway. I think you see that creature and you think
it does do a good job of introducing it right away as a credible threat. Like it's right away this thing is scary. But I think if you're sort of a fan of that kind of, you've got to be a fan of tension in games, you've got to be a fan of that of having that, because it's, even if you drop the difficulty down, which I did at a certain point, even if you drop the by the way, you can't change the difficulty during game. Once you start, if you want to change the difficulty, you've got to start again. And there's no saves coming. It does auto saves, and that's your lot. You can't. So if you make a mistake and you haven't got a save to back you up, you're in it. But that all kind of adds to that level of tension. You've got to be in it. You've got to know what you're stepping into, basically. Mm-hmm. And I think even if you're not a massive Aliens fan, if you go into this knowing I'm going into a tense shooter, I don't know if you have to be a fan. I think you would miss the references, but I think the references are slipped in such a way that they'd probably go over your head anyway. Like, then it's not like a mimic from the film. It's like at some point, you know, you switch to a shotgun and the Marine says, the first time you do it, and it doesn't get repeated, the Marine will say, I like to keep this handy for close encounters. If you know the film, you know that that's a Hicks line, that's where it comes from. If you don't, it's just somebody saying, he likes to get a shotgun out. So it's, yeah, I do think that it could cater to non-fans, but for 100% fans of fans of the film are going to get more out of it.
Well, you mentioned like fans of the genre, which is kind of a really perfect way to segment into sort of game number two on our list. But before I sort of give, because I've been through, I think 50 plus hours now I've hit in Final Fantasy 16. Before I sort of say much about it, I kind of, and this is slightly unfair because Chris Hyde, I know you've played the demo. Yeah. Mick, I believe you haven't. But I want to know, and not like in masses and masses of detail or anything like that, I just want to know briefly, really, what you want in fact, what you expect from Final Fantasy 16. Like, when you hear that name, what do you expect? What are you expecting when you both eventually play it?
I was expecting, I'm expecting something similar to 15, I think. Okay. I think that seemed to be like the way they were moving
Right. By which you mean?
Like open world, like.
Okay.
I know it's not quite open world, but it kind 16. Of has that open world. 15.
Oh, okay, right.
I'm
okay.
saying, I know 15 wasn't entirely open world. Like, you had to do that traversal thing and travel and this, that, and the other. It wasn't fully open.
Yeah.
But I was expecting that. I was expecting something that, because that's what I get from sort of the trailers, I think.
Chris,
I think
it's like, hard because I've played some of it, but yeah. like, I think.
Yeah, but what is the demo? 2-3 hours?
Yeah. It's not, I'm sure I haven't seen half of it, but like, I knowing what I knew from like trailers and bits and bobs before I started, I was expecting like high fantasy rather than like futuristic, which is, you know, I was expecting more fluid combat, probably more like closer to like sort of like Tales of Arise than turn-based stuff. And a load of swearing probably. Yeah. That's you know, what did I call it the other week? A chili mojito or something. I was expecting something a bit
yeah.
I was expecting that sort of stuff. It was going to be a bit darker, a bit heavier, fantasy setting, fluid combat. That's what I was expecting. And a whole lot of Clive is obviously what I'm there for as well, because the protagonist's name's brilliant. But like that, I'll just say, if I don't know if you're leading into this, but I'll just say it. Like, I never really have subscribed to the notion of a series must be X or a game in a series must be X.
Yeah,
right?
You are getting like, to what I was thinking.
Because, like, I've heard people call this game Devil May Clive, and I think that's brilliant as a name, right?
Oh,
but like, I never subscribe to that kind of stuff. There could be reasons like why I like certain series and stuff. I go, oh, well, what I really like about that series or that type of game is these elements.
Okay.
But like before Breath of the Wild, if I listed why I like Zelda, I wouldn't have listed any of the reasons why I like Breath of the Wild. And then
absolutely
that comes
fair.
Along
yeah.
and slaps me around the face.
But would to just to that point, what I would ask is, I respect and appreciate everything you've said, and I also respect and appreciate that, like, Breath of the Wild. Let's go Legend of Zelda 2, for argument's sake, to Ocarina of Time to Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
They're still broadly the same. They are an adventure action game.
Yeah.
They are just different versions of. The reason I ask this question is because what I want people, perhaps who I would say are like myself, who are like long time, like Final Fantasy has one of the games in Final Fantasy series is in my all-time top two of all time, so like I have a lot of love for it. Like the ones that even some people are like about, like I really like Final Fantasy 8, for example, for my sins. I think like 7, 8, and 9 were like, there was just a period of time where they were just dominant, and those three for most people like that. I think I don't know why 8 got more hate anyway. Regardless, I say that because I want people to temper it. If they've been trying to avoid seeing the game, perhaps, or playing the demo, I don't want people going in thinking they're getting a JRPG, because I don't think this is. I mean, if it is, if someone wants to argue the toss, it's by the thinnest, like by a gnat's pube. Like, you know what I mean? It really is. This is an action adventure game in the style of Devil May Cry, in the style of Bayonetta, but with the story, budget, and cutscene characterizations of a Final Fantasy that's set in a, like you say, high fantasy medieval sort of situation. That said, the combat is unbelievable. Like, and it develops, and I'm going to be really careful about it, and I'm not going to show a lot of footage if you're watching in the video version, because it's one of those games where it's like almost everything showing it feels like a spoiler, but it's only a spoiler because I know it, what happened.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a really difficult one. Like, watching the trailers back now, it's like, wow, Square. Like, really? You're showing that? But of course, I only know that because I've seen it in context. So
yeah, without the context, you don't like, know just, what it's
just
showing
like,
you.
You just see cutscenes and fights and monsters and shit, you know.
It's like I don't keep coming back to Zelda, but like with the Tears of the Kingdom trailers, and you're like, I don't know what I've just seen, but it looks great. And then you actually play it, you're like, oh, okay.
How did you show that this early? And, you know,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's one of those. Exactly. There's a few games a year that will do it.
Yeah.
it's fantastic, right? It is. It is. If you can, if you cannot, if you can't park that feeling of, you joked about it when we were chatting, like the hashtag not my Final Fantasy. Yeah. If you genuinely can't park that, you're going to have a miserable time. If you can park that and go, this is what they're doing now, you will find a phenomenal action game. The likes that you're going to see clips appearing on social media in the future of how people are doing it, and you're like, whoa, what?
Well, that's, you know, that's a point that you, that you make without me making it. But this is what they're doing now is quite apt, because this is what they're doing now. Like now, 17 might be completely...
Yeah.
17, for but, all we know, could be an isometric...
Yes and no. They've been leading toward this. Like, when you take into account 15...
Oh, well, 15's
and also and, 7 Remake. And they're not being funny. I can't seem to get anyone to agree with me on this. But if you also... no, they didn't develop it, but they own the brand. When you take into a bit of an account like Stranger of Paradise Final Fantasy Origins, and how that's... to be clear, this is not that kind of game. It's not a Souls Massacre-style game. But that game is an action game. What I would say, and I would actually give this as a genuine bit of advice, is I want to hark back to a video game long ago when some people, maybe you're watching this, weren't even born. I don't know. Dragon Age Inquisition. Okay.
Now, what that was a game.
That was
Adam.
A good game that I never finished.
Good.
That I never finished. So great, I can't comment any further. But however, there was a thing I remember at the time, and everyone would say it. The recommendation was always get out of the hinterlands.
Get your ass out of the hinterlands.
Get out of the hinterlands. Progress the story. Blah blah blah. This game does also need that little bit of advice. You won't miss any side content. Like, it's not going to be deleted off. You know, you can still do it. And I tested that to be sure. But if you spend some time, like, clearing the map, let's say, of every pop-up side quest that comes up, you will see some of the worst content in this video game, right? When you get hours and hours into it, the side content starts getting better, more interesting, and there's, like, there is... I'll get to it. Don't let me forget to talk about budget and money, because it's important at that point. But some of the early side quests are abysmal, like some of the worst you've seen since, like, PS2 era. They are literally, right, hi, Chris. Oh, hey, Adam. Adam, can you go and give this thing to Mick? Can do. Walk across there. Here you go, Mick. Thanks, Adam. Can you go and tell Chris that you've done it? Can do. Hi, Chris. Done it. Quest complete. And I'm not exaggerating. That is what you will do several times.
I knew this was coming, because, like, I've seen other reviews that a lot of people are saying they're abysmal, right? We've established I'm quite weird, right? I will see, and then maybe I'll come back next week and eat my hat, right? But that stuff doesn't bother me. Like,
you see, this is the thing. It isn't just the content, okay? Now, this is why I want to come into the budget side of things, right?
Yeah.
This game, I don't know the facts, so this is just what I'm going on, what I've experienced in, like, the last year, over the decades. This looks like one of the highest budget games I've ever played. Like, people were upset before, like, oh, how come it's not on PS4? How come it's not on this? And how come it's not on that? When you play it, you play all of it, and you see the things that I'm not going to mention here, but they're in the game and you'll experience them, you will honestly go, I don't know how they got the money to do this. I don't know how someone went, yeah, do that. That's fine. Do that. Like, have all that on screen. Do that. Make that. Make it look like that. I don't know how they convinced. So maybe it's... I just don't know. I think this is in terms of budget. Now, the thing is, I think they know that. Right? I think they know that, and I think they want you to know that. And it reminds me a little bit of... Do you know the South Park episode where I think it's Tesla... Where it was when Tesla became a big brand thing, and it was like all the Tesla drivers were going around farting and sniffing their own farts again. Ooh, yeah! Like that. I don't know if this is a reference that's hitting home for people, I don't know. But it is that.
I'm aware of the term sniffing your own farts, so carry on.
But it does do that a little bit. So it's not just that you're going, like, person A to B to A, and blah, blah, blah. Every time you go to someone, they'll give you their spiel, you have to click a button to accept the quest, and it will go da-na-na-na, quest accepted, and you're like, okay, I get it. And then when you finish it, it'll go boom, quest complete, and you're like, okay. And then it fades back to, like, an image of Clive or the person just, like, you know, standing there, and then the camera pulls back and you carry on, and you're like, no, I get it. Could I play? Because I really do enjoy it. I really do quite enjoy the combat, but then this is on me because I'm going around clearing the map out. That, if you do that on its own, you'd be fine. This game is very story heavy. Like it, when people have compared it to Game of Thrones, that is not a mark that is missed. No, that is very much the case.
Yeah,
it is one of those where, you know, like early on in Game of Thrones, I know you've both seen it all, like where you are like, people will be talking about the names and you're having to go, okay, yeah, no, I got you. It's that one. Okay, it's that. It's that kind of universe. It's that kind of north v south kind of thing going on. That means that in the opening... And you might have experienced this in the demo, Chris, but in the opening, and when I say opening, I mean the opening and probably the 8 hours that come from it. And it never really stops doing it. It just does it less. It just takes control away from you. And it gives you this lengthy cutscene, and then you go, that was cool. And then you walk 3 steps, and it takes control away from you. And it shows you a cutscene. You're like, right, okay, am I going to... Because that combat was really cool. Can I go back to that? Now, when you progress deeper into the game, it does that less, and the levels, if you will, get larger, and you are doing a lot more combat, and you have a lot more to do in combat. There are more mechanics invested in that you can use, and so it's not a problem anymore. And then, like the cutscenes, these amazing, high budget, beautifully animated, well voiced, by the way, cutscenes.
Yeah.
Are like a reward. Like a cutscene often feels like it should be, like if you defeat a boss or the end of a boss fight. You know, they're the reward for your hard work. Whereas at the start, if you're doing that, but you, like I have the problem, are also clearing every single side quest you can, it does become a bit of a, you are stalling yourself. Now, the only thing that I genuinely think this game has a problem with that isn't me related and or you, Chris Hyde, in terms of like clearing out the side quests, I do think structurally it has pacing issues. Like the story is peaks and troughs, which is fine because that's what a good story should, you know, you should have some downtime, but the downtime is so significant in between some serious story beats that the pacing does suffer. There's a story mission that I'm not going to describe or allude to, other than saying it's like those side quests I've discovered, and it comes right after a fairly major chunk of story where you're like, fucking let's go then, we're going we're not going, I have to do that, it's not a side. And that's the pacing, like I say, it's like if the pacing's an up and down wave like that, it's not working if you're not on video. It actually is, it's more up and then it's down and then it's up. But, again, to counter my own argument, the combat, man.
I want to talk about the combat, because I have some frame of reference, because like, from obviously the demo. I mean, the combat is where the combination of the combat, the story I was up for, and some of the set piece stuff that you see just in the demo were the three areas where I was like, I am all in for this. Even in the demo, it's sort of slow going to start with, but then you get a lot of combat sections and it's really, I adore the combat. I have found it, even in it, I imagine it's very basic what I'm seeing compared to what will happen later, but I just find it simple but fluid, and there's enough things that I found I could unlock relatively early on that gave me lots of options to deal with different situations. And I just always felt in control. And we come back to that thing where you feel like a badass when you're playing it. Like,
100%.
And I feel like, you know, and I should be. I'm a fucking legendary Phoenix Knight of called Clive. I should 100%. Be feeling like a badass. I shouldn't be feeling like, oh, I don't quite know what I'm doing. No, I should be wrecking up the shit. And even on bosses, like, and I know I've played early bosses, right? I get that. But like...
I guarantee you there are 2 boss fights in this game that at least one, if not both, will appear on our moment of the year from everyone who has played it. Because it's fucking astonishing. Like, we're I want to say no more than that, actually.
I mean...
Wow.
I'll be honest, there's stuff in the demo that I'd be like... That was cool.
No, I know. And this is what I'm saying. So imagine that, again, as a thing. And it just keeps...
Yeah.
Like, there is one exactly. particular fight where I genuinely was like... Of course you should, but did anyone ever... of course you could, but who said you should? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Yeah,
like, you know, there's bits you're playing and bits you're watching where you're like, I just don't believe It's like, did they secretly get like access to a bank account somewhere and just keep going, more effects? Yeah. Astonishing.
Yeah, and for me, like, I mean, we'll see how I feel with the pacing and stuff. Like, we'll see how I go with that. But like, the combat is so fun. It's so Moorish, and like I said, I could see even the stuff that I could see, which I imagine was quite stripped down, right? And you unlock loads of stuff later. But I could see how I could build, invest in my points and stuff in areas where I want to go. And I was just like, this is cool. And like, even in the bosses, I was just like, I'm in control. It's early bosses, right? But I can see what you want me to do. You don't want me to bang my head against a brick wall for 3 hours against this boss. You want me to kind of get hit a couple of times, learn what I'm doing, dodge, and then kick its fucking ass and have a good time while I'm doing it. Because I will say, not trying to spoil, but like the cinematic moments, you know what I mean by that? Those, they're cool. Like that's like the kind of with things we're talking about a couple of years ago on Tales of Arise, where you're just like, right. And then they're not hard, but they're like, you're like, so I'll just say it because it's in the fucking demo, right? There's these bits, Mick, where like there'll be like a little mini cutscene in a fight. And then if you press you're either pressing an attack or a dodge button. And it basically, if you get it in time, it's like a quick time event, but it's like a slow quick time event. It's not like,
it's kind of God of War, like in the middle of a big fight, yeah, it will suddenly ask you to deflect, but not like in the second, it will give you a slow hand.
And something awesome happens because you've done it. And it kind of knows it's a cinematic thing. And then like a Marvel scene plays out and it just feels amazing. But some of those could happen multiple times.
But it gives you that agency to
initiate. You are not just watching a cutscene.
You're not just watching someone being awesome.
You have to be ready.
You could fuck it up.
Yeah.
But like, you
can, by the way.
It's not punishing, but it just brings you in and it just reinforces this nature of you feeling like a badass, which is what the combat does. Rather than like, if I'm being overly harsh of like, maybe like turn-based one, just like, have I picked the right tactic for this particular row of events versus actually, no, I've just kind of dodged and battered you and then moved out of the way and done a move. And that there's a different type of kind of catharsis to that. So I really enjoyed it. I'm all in for Game of Thrones type storying and people going, you cock. I'm all up for that.
It was quite jarring the first time.
The very first time.
Because it is something they haven't done. I didn't know that was going to be in it. So when he first swears, Clive, I'm like, oh. I will also say, I'm not certain of where the demo ends, but I have a feeling I know, and if I'm right, even in that demo there's a cutscene where I think they earn their rating. Like, it's very clear they wanted this to be a very mature violent experience, and there's a particular scene
that
happens where it ends, let's just say it ends in Clive shouting, like screaming, it was genuinely me. I was like sitting further back going, whoa.
This is what I mean about moments. Mm-hmm. And even just after that, they do extend it. You can't control it, but there's a cutscene around and you were like, Game of Thrones story. And you're like, wow, okay, right. This is, it's not like it's never been done before, the type of plots it's going through, but like, it is like interesting, shocking.
I'm aware that like you're going to play more of it. Sure like Lyle will. Everyone will play this game. It's a big enough game. But I do want to, just before it gets lost or forgotten in the melee of moving forward, so to speak, mention the accessibility. Because while you can choose a difficulty, the one thing it maintains in terms of RPG is that you can, you equip your sword, your bits and bobs and your bangles, blah, 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 and all that. And your three accessory slots, there are ones that you get like at the start of the game that are automatically equipped if you pick the like easy mode or whatever it's called. If you're playing on the action based mode, there are three or four of them, and you can equip them, and you can equip them for the entire game. And one of them will make it so that, for example, there's a dog called Torgal who they're going to make millions selling plushies of, I would imagine. but that Torgal, you can control him, tell him when to attack, and he can do a little heal on you. You can, if you don't want to do that, you can actually equip an item that just does it all for you, Torgal. But you can also equip an item that sorts parrying for you, so that if you're going to get attacked, it spins up a menu on the screen where you just press the R1 button, which you would be doing if you weren't. You'd know that I didn't use that one, but I know Chris tried it a bit as well. Accessibility-wise, like, it really is, I think, quite a... I think you can just like hold down the square button and it will combo and stuff for you as well if you equip one of them.
It's like, there's like 5 or 6 of them to choose from, and you can equip through. I think it's quite good that you can. I mean, I, I was like, I must play it on normal and try the full experience first before I try anything.
See, so I quite like the toggle blank. Control one. I quite like that.
I mean, I've not got once... to that point where okay. He's just a cute puppy.
Okay. The thing is, once you're getting a lot of abilities, shall we say, and the enemy's getting harder, because you flick on the left D-pad, essentially, to go between toggle and like inventory for your three equipped potions.
Yeah.
And I found that some battles, it was like, I kind of don't want to worry about him at the moment. I'll let the game worry about him, and I'll focus on myself and healing and blah, blah, blah. I really, really enjoyed it. It actually
nice
got its claws into
it,
me. I think so too. It really lets you customize. But I will say, like I said, I think it got its hooks into me a bit later than others. Once the levels started opening up, I was like, I am having a great time. Once it kind of left me alone, because like the story's great, by the way, and I really enjoyed it. There are some bits I didn't like as much as others, but that's a story, isn't it? Everyone will have different opinions. But as you progress and the maps get bigger, it's not open world, not for me. It's a level based, but some of the levels are bigger than others. There can be towns within them, but it's not like an open world where you just can walk from A to B.
From the map, it.
But that's what I'm saying. It's not really like it's more like an action adventure. But it is an action adventure game. I wouldn't consider this a JRPG at all. I'd only consider it an RPG in the way that most games are role playing games, because you are dictionary definition playing a role in a video game. I loved it. I kept playing it. I was gonna go for the platinum, but there's just one trophy that I'm like, I can't. Not that I can't be arsed. Basically would mean I'd have to complete the game twice.
One of those.
I mean, you could skip every cutscene, and there is a lot of them, but like, it was just when I saw that, I was like, it's not that I don't want to, it's not that I can't be asked, it's that there's just a lot of video games coming. I haven't finished Diablo yet.
I don't care if it annoys people. I hate games that make you complete them more than...
Almost up there with my forced the old when Xbox used to do it, forced multiplayer achievements. But that's a topic for another podcast.
Another day,
So before we get to listener correspondence, Chris, talk to us about Escape Academy.
Yeah, so Escape Academy. So it's got a new DLC that's available now called Escape from the Past. And like the this is the second DLC, like the first one, it's basically five new escape rooms essentially to play on top of the main game, and like the first DLC, they kind of got a theme around them. So this the theme of this kind of DLC pack is it's as you may guess from the title, set in the past. It's set when the Escape Academy itself was first kind of being established, and that's pretty cool because you get to kind of play some of the characters that were old in the base game when they're joining the academy in this DLC. So there's like some familiar faces and stuff, but the other thing that it's kind of going for is kind of this like it's like this kind of murder mystery type angle. So like you'll play like the first escape room, and then at the end of that escape room it seems like someone's trying to kill the headmaster. So now it's up to you to kind of try and piece together from escaping other escape rooms who's trying to kill the headmaster. It's still escape rooms, right? Let's not pretend you suddenly become Sherlock Holmes or anything like that. Like, you're not like piecing together evidence, but there it does kind of climax in the last sort of the final escape room is more of a whodunit type thing, and you can accuse people and stuff. I won't spoil any more than that, but that it does deliver quite well on that, and there's little quirks to that which I won't go into, but it does do that sort of very well. It's not just tenuous links. It does kind of bow into it. In terms of the gameplay, look, we've been here a couple of times before. It's Escape Academy. If you enjoyed Escape Academy and the other DLC, you know exactly what you're getting here. It's a good solid learning curve. The levels are all kind of laid out well. It's that fine balance, that good balance between I sort of know what I kind of need to do, but just trying to figure out how I need to do it. You're never sort of going, what? Like, I don't get it. Like, you kind of know what you need to do. You're just trying to figure the details out. I said in my review, which is on the site right now, like, I found it perhaps a little bit easier than the other DLC.
I don't know if that's just smart. That's all.
That, I don't know if that's because I'm great or if I've got used to the way they think and maybe that. But like, I certainly found in the first DLC, I was like, oh crap, I'm running out of time. Shit. Okay. Whereas I didn't quite. It wasn't like I was like, oh, I've done this in 5 minutes. But I was like, I wasn't quite down to the wire as I was in the first DLC. So. But like I say, it's hard for me to know if, you know, some things just click with certain people easier, and maybe that was what it goes. But it's still a challenge. It's still, you know, what, probably 3 hours worth of escape rooming in there. It's good fun. Like I say, if you like Escape Academy, the base game, this is more of the same, done well. Get it up, yeah, kind of thing, as we would say. And if you're struggling at any point in the DLC,
what would you suggest?
I would suggest going to godisageek.com.
Oh, I do that every day, though.
Well, I mean, they probably do if they're listeners, but there's another reason to go there, because there's a complete walkthrough of the entire DLC.
Who wrote that?
Step by step, everything you need to know if you get stuck on any level of the DLC, or indeed any level of Escape Academy. Wow. It's all there. So even if this is what's kickstarting you to play the base game, then if you get stuck, go to godisageek.com and we'll walk you through it every step of the way.
Wow.
Couldn't ask for more, could you?
Could not ask for more.
Well, Chris, you could ask more. You could ask a question to me.
You could ask, you know what? The only thing you'd probably want to do on top of that is ask us questions in, you know, a podcast form. Let's play the jingle. Chris is high. Listen to Carl's Thunder. It's time. Chris, hi. Okie dokie. So, just a few questions this week from Mick, who, not Mick Fraser, Mick, who always sends in questions for all of us to answer individually. So, Adam, I'll start with your questions. So he says, we've been discussing Final Fantasy for weeks now. With the Brimstone and Dust now settled, would it be in your top five Final Fantasy games? And I know you don't want to answer this, so I'm pleased he's asked it.
Top five.
Five. Of however many there have actually been.
Question. Would we consider Final Fantasy VII and Final Fantasy VII Remakes different entities and thus both available to appear on a top five list?
I mean, surely it only matters if this is hovering around number six.
Well, I think it might be, though. That's the thing.
So it's close then. So it's close to top five, if that's why you're asking that question. I mean, if I said no and you've got to just put seven in, does this make the top five?
I think you've got to split them. I think you have to consider.
I think they're very different. Their story's different as well. Like, you
it's
know.
Going to get to the point where that Final Fantasy VII top five.
You could actually. That would be funny, wouldn't it? What's your favourite
Final Fantasy? What's Final Fantasy top 7, five? Final Fantasy VII. Yeah,
seven remake.
Flipping games.
Seven remake, 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah.
I don't think it quite is. I think it would be 6.
Okay.
And I'm talking purely, you got to remember they did like 10, 10, 2, 13, 1, 2, and 3.
Oh, yeah.
Which, to be fair, none of those, the 13s are on my list. But I think 7, 8, 9, and 10 would be on my list. And I think Remake, because of how much I love 7, would squeeze it out. So I think if you couldn't have Remake, it might be 5. But also, it's a bit too soon. Like, it's a bit too soon for me to be...
Yeah, you've got to let the dust settle a little bit.
You know, I haven't played some of the old ones for such a long time. I know they did the Pixel remakes. I didn't play any of them. It's been a long time. So I think it probably isn't just... Like, on any given day, it might squeeze in, maybe. So, sort of not really a proper answer, but that's the answer. No,
and then... Presumably, still talking about Final Fantasy 16. What would you want in potential DLC? Obviously, without spoilers. See,
I don't think I can answer this without spoilers.
Oh well, should you not answer it then? Well, more costumes for Clive.
No, I will
skimpy
say
costumes for Clive.
No, I'm not going to say that.
There'll be a mod for that.
More characters with names like that.
Clive,
because there is another one in the demo you should have encountered.
If
like
Sandra,
Leslie, you want
Sandra
a character called
that.
Leslie, or
yeah.
You're not far off. Like there, I mean, because you must have met one of the other characters with a name like that. Because I'm sure I saw people talking about that.
I've seen one, a male character with
beginning
a name
with
like
R.
That. Yes.
Yeah, because I'm sure I saw someone in our Discord mention him. I'm like, well, he's definitely, that's how I know he's in that early part of the game. So,
yeah,
like,
I
assume, you know, more like that. I wouldn't mind like a Trevor somewhere in there.
Trevor.
I wouldn't mind a Barry.
Barry.
You know.
But yeah, let's the protagonist of
Castlevania.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah,
because I named all of my horses in Breath of the Wild. I named them Barry, Gary, Larry, Harry.
And you're a writer. That's
It started, and I think the first one was Barry, and then I was like, well, "What do I name the next one?" And I was like, oh, "Screw it, like Harry or something." Then it became a mission to think of names that rhyme.
Gary,
with
Larry,
and then forgetting all of that, I got to Tears of the Kingdom. And I got a horse, and I was like, I don't know if I get Dave. And then I saw all these other horses that I'd named, but I'd forgotten I'd named them.
Thing in all of my, when you get to name anything, is always called sausage. And then I just, then bacon, then egg. And, you know, anyway, that's, yeah, I'd like more characters like that.
Yeah, Barry.
Yeah, your questions. And I should mention we had a super chat on the live chat from Mikhail. Xenoblade 3 DLC Mojito, because that's related to his question. He says, Chris, is a mojito better than Breath of the Wild?
I do like mojitos. I don't know. Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Just for the hot takes, just for the controversy, just for the YouTube short when that gets clipped. Yes, okay. A mojito is better than Breath of the Wild.
Sorry, say that again without me making noise there, so it's nice and clean.
A mojito is better than Breath of the Wild.
Okay, now one more time with you on full screen, just in case.
A mojito is better than Breath of the Wild.
The second question isn't really a question, it's just a statement.
Yep.
Chris, I saw the Xenoblade 3 soundtrack went up for pre-order with DLC music included and thought of you.
I need to know, right, if the DLC has banging music in it, which I guess is a question back to Mick. I haven't played it, but like we talked about the lack of upbeat bangers, not, you know what I mean, like high tempo bangers in Xenoblade 3. So I'll be interested to know if they have that in the DLC. But
true,
yeah, I haven't played it. I need to play it. I'm an arsehole. Speaking of arseholes, Mick, your questions.
No, hang on. Sorry, could you say that again on full screen and without us making noise, just for the...
What, speaking of arseholes?
No, when you said I'm an arsehole, no, I'm not going to say it.
Oh, I'm an arsehole. Any more times?
No, that was good. I think that was a clean take, as they say. In the...
Mick, what are your thoughts on Diablo 4 weeks after launch? Oh, I'm glad we've invited him on. Jesus.
This is
an audio podcast, Mick.
This is a funny... Okay, so my thoughts are pretty much what everybody's are, I think. I really like it. I still think it's a very, very, very good game. I'm not sure... And look, what?
No, it's just because you reviewed it and gave it a 9, and I was just waiting for the other. It's a really very, very good game.
No, I still think it's a very good game. I think Blizzard are in danger of tweaking it just a bit too much. Like, there's been a lot of changes already to balancing and things. There's a lot more coming. I'm really, really not happy. And I played Diablo 3 a lot, but I'm really not keen on this whole having to make a whole new character from scratch to play the seasonal stuff,
yeah.
Because and the reason it didn't
bother
me so much...
You get invested in that character you've got there.
Exactly.
Like, whether it's two or three
Diablo
of them.
3, yeah, and I mean, in Diablo 3, I dipped in and out of the seasons throughout, so it was never really an issue. Like, every time I went back to it after seasons had passed, I didn't mind starting a new character and jumping in for a bit. And it was a lot quicker, I feel, to level a character in Diablo 3. In Diablo 4... the grind up to 50, even when you know what you're doing, even when you're playing quite effectively, for somebody who isn't playing it for 6 or 8 hours a day, the grind is quite steep. And to have to do that again, like I finished a character for the review, and then, as you know, they reset it, so you had to do another one. So when I played it again, I got another character past 50. Then I started leveling an alt, and then I realized, fuck, I can't use either of these characters that I've put all this time into in the season. So I really like it. Very good. I'm really not happy about that. And I think a lot of people, I know there's a lot of people like, well, it's Diablo. They did it in Diablo 3. What do you expect? Fuck off. Like, I don't care if they did it in Diablo 3.
If you sound like
Diablo 4.
The official line is, Fuck off.
Yeah. You know, that's a bullshit argument because they've left stuff out and added new stuff. This is a completely different game to Diablo 3. It's not. It's Diablo 4. So that's bullshit, having that as an excuse to hide behind. I don't think it's good practice. I think it's going to alienate some people who don't want to start the whole thing all over again. The more casual people who still are looking forward to playing the season, because the seasons have new story content. So, you know, you can't experience that new story content without starting a new character, but then you have to have a character over a certain level to play the season. I don't understand exactly how it's going to work, but it sounds weird. Like nonsense. And I don't think Blizzard had to do this at all.
There's a lot Blizzard didn't have to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And let's not talk about that here.
I don't think that's good. I think that's a bad decision they made, but that's. That may change it, but I suppose they are listening to feedback. They seem to be anyway so far.
Okay, and then the last question this week is, would you buy Diablo 4 on Switch 2 in 2024 if such a console and port existed?
Yes. Yes. I mean, I have Diablo 3 on every platform Diablo I could possibly own it on.
Diablo 3 on Switch cracking. Was amazing. Was
brilliant, yeah. And I think if Switch 2 is powerful enough to really do a like Diablo 4 justice visually and what have you, then yeah, I'm not 100% convinced on having an always online component on a Switch console because that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I would probably pick it up. I think yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the end of the questions, mate.
Oh, there you go. It's time.
Chris, hi.
Thank you there, Chris. We just actually had a question in the live chat. As you said, that's the end of the list of correspondence.
I'm an arsehole.
Why?
Just because I ignored the question.
No, I've just seen it.
I wanted to repeat the hilarious, you know, soundbite from earlier.
Do you want to do it though, very quickly? Because it's an easy one for me.
So Fernando
Ferreira
says...
Do I have to play the jingle again?
No, because I started literally reading it
unofficial
out,
so no. Listener correspondence. Wow. And,
yeah. So Fernando Ferreira says, hi, gents. I've got a question for listener correspondence. If you can pick only one, what is your personal favourite Final Fantasy title?
Final Fantasy VII. Good choice. Did you not read the last bit there? Because I like when people say the name of that game. The PS. I'll accept Lost Odyssey as an answer, Fernando said.
Yeah.
That game, I love that game. That's the closest anyone ever got to a Final Fantasy VII before they... Yeah, but no, for me, it's Final Fantasy VII. Always has been, always will be. And I mean the original, not the remake, which is great, but the original.
And same for me as well.
Oh, really?
Final Fantasy VII still, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Nine's a good choice.
That's why it was... Nine is good. See, I like you said earlier, 7, 8, 9, I didn't play 10. I don't know why, I just didn't ever play 10. But 7, 8, 9 were, for periods, my favourite games at the time ever. So, but 7 has always been very high on my list of games of all time.
Fair enough. Just before we go, to remind people that you can go to patreon.com/godisageek where you can support us and join our Discord and chat with our community, who are all mostly lovely people. Steve's there too, but...
A couple of rogues, yeah.
And some GIFs that end up... This podcast can end up being GIFable, apparently. That's always good fun. I got a good one the other week.
You literally asked me to record stuff, so yeah.
No, I wouldn't do it for any other reason. No, it was for personal enjoyment. but yeah, follow us on the social media, God is a Geek. Go to the godisageek.com website, obviously. If you're not watching us on YouTube, you can. youtube.com/godisageek. Do subscribe, hit the bell button so you don't miss future content. And other than that, really, all that remains to do is to say thank you to Chris and to Mick for being here on the podcast this episode.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
And we will, I think we'll be back next week. We in the summer, we like to keep it a bit loose and breezy because it's just too bloody hot. Unless we record at midnight, that'd be an interesting one. Everyone's had a couple of ales. Maybe we should do that. One day we'll do it at the God is a Geek meetup. We'll do a live podcast. Everyone will be shit-faced. It'll be cracking. I've said it now. Everyone has to will it into existence for that to happen. Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Mick. And we'll speak to you, listener, whenever you choose to listen. Or next week. Up to you, really. Can't even remember my catchphrase. Yeah, keep waving, mate. Keep waving. This is an audio form. I might cut this bit. Catch you later. Bye for now.